So last time we were talking about the bidding scene, we were talking about cadaveric organ transplants, right? Can you take an organ from someone who is dead and take that and put it to someone who's alive, right? So we'll finish up that. We talked about the Binyan Siyan. And then I'd like to spend the rest of today and next time doing Tumas Kohanim. It'll be an introduction to Tumas Kohanim. Tumas Kohanim can take us a whole year. I will not bore you with Tumas Kohanim the whole year. We'll do today and Wednesday. Anyone here a Kohen? No, okay. Still, we'll talk about the halachos that apply to non-Kohanim that are relevant to Tumas Kohanim. And then we'll start up with different issues when we come back, and I'll just figure out what the test is and the midterm. Just a quick thing, I guess, about Yom Kippur. I think we said this. I'm not sure if I said this, but a nice Yom Kippur vart that we is relevant to what we did. So remember, if we the Gemara in Yuma Pehe is looking for sources. How do we know that Pikuach Nefesh is Docha Shabbos? Right? How do you know that you're allowed to violate Shabbos to save a life? So right, we said V'chai Behem. That's the one we go with. And then we said there's one before, Chalel Olav Shabbat Acha. Right? Violate one Shabbos to keep many. Right, violate for him one Shabbos, Kedei Sheyishmor. So that he can keep many Shabbos in the future, right? It's you do a calculation. Yes, we want to keep Shabbos. The goal is to keep Shabbos, to maximize Shabbos observance. The way to maximize Shabbos observance is for this person to live more so he can maximize Shabbos observance. And we talked about, do we need Chalel Olav? What happens to Chalel Olav? Once we have V'chai Bahem, right? Because V'chai Bahem seems to be the final answer to the Gemara. Does this still apply, right? We saw the different... You can go back to that shiur and look over it. So, the Ran, I think in the beginning of Yuma, he wants to know, if you have only Chalel Olav, so what if you know the person's only going to live for a short while? Right, it's Shabbos, and this person is not going to live till next Shabbos. So Halacha L'maaseh, what do?
Save.
You save him, right? Because V'chai Bahem. But let's say we didn't have V'chai Bahem. Theoretical question. Let's say we didn't have a chayv him. Does Chalel Olav work? Can you violate this Shabbos? He's not going to keep Shabbos in the future. So, another practical point. Yes, because who are you to determine that he will not live another week? Right? You're a doctor. You're a person. You're not Kadosh Baruch Hu. You're not in charge. You can't decide that. Practically, you save him, right? Again, this is a completely theoretical thing just for a point. So, the Ran says, even if he has Chalel Olav, why would you do it? That he has time to do tshuva. Right? Chalel Olav, so that he'll have time to do tshuva. I think we said this, but I think it's a nice point. The Rabbi Soloveitchik said, I heard from Rabbi Binyamin Tabori, that, what does it mean he'll do tshuva? How does that help? And so he'll do tshuva, that's great. Right? It's always wonderful to do tshuva, so we should violate Shabbos so he can do tshuva. Chalel Olav Shabbat Achad Kadei Sheish Mor Shabbos Osarve, that he can observe many Shabboses. We saw Chasam Sofer says, you violate a mitzvah to perform that mitzvah later, right? It's a mitzvah calculation. How many Shabboses can I maximize observing? Violate one to keep 150. But Shabboses, so how does that work? So you explain to Rabbi Soloveitchik that time in halacha works very differently. Time is not necessarily linear, going from point A to point B only. What does it mean when you do tshuva? When you do tshuva, you can make up for all those Shabboses you didn't keep in the past. It's as if you went back in time and kept those Shabboses. So if you live for those extra couple of minutes on Shabbos and you do tshuva, right? We always assume that we can only go forward. So Rabbi Soloveitchik tries to prove, it's in the halachic mind, in the halachic man a little bit, that that's an artificial construct. Halacha doesn't view time in the same way. Time can go back and forth. If you do tshuva, it's as if you kept Shabbos in the past. So if I do tshuva right now, it's as if I've kept the Shabbos 3 years ago and I didn't keep. So even in terms of Chalel Olav Shabbat Achat, you're still actually enabling him to keep more Shabboses because he's doing tshuva, and he's keeping those Shabboses, or making up for parts of Shabbos that he didn't keep in the past, right now, even if he won't make it to another Shabbos. Something important to realize, when we do tshuva, it's not only improving ourselves for the future, it's also making up for the past. We can, therefore, like be better people right now, because we can correct everything we've done in the past, and then move forward. So I think it's a very empowering notion, that not only are we dealing with anything we may have done in the past, but we're changing who we are right now, based on fixing that which we did in the past. I think that's a powerful notion, but I think not relevant to the current topic, but I thought it was nice for us for Yom Kippur. Okay, so we are now talking about the Binyan Siyan, right? So we're talking about, can you take out an organ from somebody, right, who's dead, to save somebody else's life? Right, so we saw what are the issues, what are the potential problems, can you remember?
Nivel
HaMeis, right, so it's a prohibition. Kavod HaMeis, we said.
Kuara.
Kvura is a problem. And Hana Minabis, right? So we're going to say, well, if it's Pikuach Nefesh, we're going to pretty much violate all of these things, right? It's Pikuach Nefesh. So long as it's Pikuach Nefesh. If we have a Chola B'faneinu, a statistical Chola B'faneinu, right? However we define Pikuach Nefesh, you have to have Pikuach Nefesh, right? You're violating prohibition of Nivel Ameis. You're not performing the mitzvah of Kvura. And it may or may not be a problem of Kavod Ameis, right? So you, right? So you need to have Pikuach Nefesh. You need to have something to save someone's life to do it. So remember the Binyan Siyun, we went to a tangent. The Binyan Siyun wants to know, can you save yourself by stealing somebody else's stuff? Right? So we saw the Gemara in Baba Kama with David HaMelech. Right? David HaMelech had this problem that the Plishtim were hiding in the field, and he didn't want to go out into the field. It was dangerous. So they told him, can he burn down the field? And then the Plishtim would either be exposed or die, and that way he'd win the war. Right? So, but the field didn't belong to him. It belonged to somebody else. So he's effectively saving himself with somebody else's material wealth.
That's a different case because he has...
That's what the Gemara says. He's the king, he can do whatever he wants. So it sounds like if you're not the king, you're not allowed to. And the Binyan Siyun tries to say from Rashi, it's actually prohibited. You're not allowed to save yourself. Asur lahatzil atzmo b'mamon chaveru. You're not allowed to save yourself with somebody else's money. Most of the other Mefarshim assume that that just means that you have to pay him back. Right? If I'm allowed to, you know... there's a word for it. I'm allowed to take over your property. That's not the word I'm looking for. There's like the police can commandeer your property to save someone else's life, but I have to pay you back.
Didn't we say that according to Binyan Siyun? Even if you intend to pay back?
Right, so Binyan Siyun, that's how most Mefarshim understand it, right? Most people understand it as no, you have to, you just have to have intention to pay him back. That's right, as long as you have it, that's how most Mefarshim understand, not the Binyan Siyun.
Right.
Okay, Binyan Siyun saying no, it's forbidden to do, even if you will pay him back.
Is there any reason, like in terms of like severe punishment, the degree of severity for committing an aveira, right?
Mm-hmm.
You're allowed, you know, you break Shabbos to steal it. You steal, it's far less. So if you're allowed to break Shabbos in order to save somebody's life,
right? So that's what he asks. Why? So why is it one of the big three?
Right.
It's not one of the big three.
What, steal? Right.
Stealing
right.
is not one of the big three, right? Yeah, you can violate Shabbos, Yom Kippur.
Some hold that it would.
Right, he says it would be in that category. Why didn't the Gemara put it in that category?
Just stealing. Not that there's like much more than that.
It's, yeah, stealing.
It's a big four.
He says it's the fourth is included in the three somehow.
Okay.
We're going to leave it out because it's kind of technical and
yeah.
I didn't really understand it that well. Minchas Yitzchak also tries to explain, Rav Yitzchak Yaakov Weiss. He also tries to explain, but it's not one of the big three. So he tries to say, no, it really is.
I think they put it into Shiuch HaDamim.
It has to be put into Shiuch HaDamim somehow, right? So someone asked the Binyan Siyun, right, if you make someone poor, it's as if you killed him. Right? So the Gemara says something like that. And it's generally understood to be an agadic statement. It's not like for real, you didn't really kill him. Right? So he says, so the person's saying, is that what you mean? He's like, no, that's not what I mean. He really means that it's part of, it's really prohibited. It's not one of these agadic statements. He really thinks it's part of that. And we saw that he had a proof, remember, from, we know about Rashi by the Besar Kodesh. If you recall, I'm not going to go through it again. You can listen to last year. You can look at your notes. He had another proof from... Why didn't the Torah say... When he said, can I... when the Torah says, you know, when someone comes to you and says, kill this guy or I'll kill you, right? So what's the din? What's the halacha? What do you do?
You have to be killed.
You have to be killed, right? Why?
It's supposed to say your blood is red.
Right, my chazis. Who says your blood is red? He says, well, why didn't the Gemara say... Why didn't the Gemara say that, well, you're not allowed to say, I can't steal his money to save my life. I certainly can't take his life to save my life. So the Binyan Siyun asked on himself.
Let's say that there's a hierarchy, though.
Yes, right. The Binyan Siyun is asking on himself, if I'm right, why didn't the Gemara say what I'm saying? Why didn't the Gemara say the Binyan Siyun Svara? The Binyan Siyun saying to himself, if I'm right that stealing, I can't steal to save a life. So why didn't the Gemara say, well, if I can't steal to save a life, I certainly can't kill to save a life. Right? And he says, well, the fact that the Gemara didn't say that proves he's wrong. Well, he's asking on himself. So he has an answer. His answer is, no, I'm really right. But the Gemara is including something else, meaning I could, if I want to steal from you, I'm not allowed to steal from you to save my own life. What if you say, no, it's okay? But you give up. You're my fellow. You say, no, it's okay. Take my money, save your life. Right? Well, you're allowed to do that. And then I'm allowed to use that money. Or your property, or whatever. You're not allowed to say, if someone holds a gun to my head and says, shoot you, or I'm going to kill you, you can't say, no, shoot me, it's okay. You can't give that up. So the Gemara chose their answer. The Binyan Siyun's question was, why did the Gemara choose the answer of my chazis when it could have given the Binyan Siyun's answer? So he says to include this other case that you can't be mochel. You can't say take my money. You can say take my money, but you can't say take my life. So that's not a question. He says that's not a question for him. Okay? Practically, you're allowed if you need if you're. So let's say just halacha l'maisa. Should never be halacha l'maisa. If you see someone chasing after somebody to kill him. So what's the halacha? What do you do?
Yeah.
Reuven chasing after Shimon and he's trying to kill Shimon and you're standing a bystander. What do you do?
Kill Reuven.
No, incorrect.
Wrote it.
Ideally, what do you do?
Wound
you have to stop Reuven. You have to stop Reuven. That's the halacha. The halacha is you have to stop Reuven.
If you
can stop him by any other means other than killing him, you have to, right? And let's say if you can't, then you can kill him. Let's say you could have stopped him by any other means and you killed him anyway. So then you're a murderer. Do you get me suspecting or not? Some machlokas rishona. But ideally, you have to stop him. That should be the halacha. You stop him. If you have to kill him, you have to kill him. What if? So then the Gemara has three cases. What if in order to do so you have to destroy the Reuven's property? Reuven's chasing after Shimon, and in order for you to do it, you have to destroy Reuven's property. So what's the halacha? Why? Right. The Gemara says his property can't be worth more than his life. If I can kill him, I can also destroy his property on the way. And what if he destroys... So what can I use somebody else's property also? What if I need to use somebody else's property to destroy somebody else's property? It's Matzalat Mamon Chavero. They said in the case of a Rodef, ideally you're culpable for that property.
Yeah.
But Midrabon, then they said no. You're exempt.
But that guy, but are you supposed... You're obviously allowed to use your own property.
Yeah.
So then does he have to pay you back? Also got a chief to stop the Rodef.
Everyone has a chief to stop the road. Every single person has a chief to stop the road.
You can use his property to do it.
You can. No, can I? Right, no. So the question is, you're not here.
I'm not here.
You're not present right now. Let's say, but you're, I need to use your car. I need to commandeer your car in order to chase after the road if you're nowhere to be found.
Yeah.
So you're not chayev to save this guy, save Shimon. You're not here.
You're not there.
You're not there.
So it depends on proximity?
Well, I can't chayev people who aren't around. You only have a chiyuv if you're able to do it, meaning at least present.
Okay.
Present and able. Willing, maybe not, but you have to be capable and present. If you're not present, you're in a different country.
You're capable of a phone call.
Okay, so then you have to do whatever you can. So let's say there's no time, whatever it is.
Okay.
So the assumption is that I can't, you're not here, you're not chayef right now. If I take your property, I'm allowed to take your property, I have to pay back. Mm-hmm. We said no. The Rabbanan said no, you don't have to pay him back to encourage people to save people. Okay, but ideally, you owe him, but Midrabanan, is Talach and Shachlarach, ideally, in theory at least, you're Chayev, but Midrabanan, you're Pater, to encourage people to do this. That's just Talach HaMaisa. So the Binyan Siyan has this very interesting point. So then he says, his whole point is to get at this. He says an autopsy, or a dissection, or taking an organ, is stealing. It's theft. And therefore, even for Pikuach Nefesh, it's prohibited. I'm not allowed to take your money to save somebody else. I'm not allowed to take your organ to save somebody else either. Right? He assumes that you have...
How can you steal from a mace?
How can you steal from a mace? So that's a little bit of a problem. Right? That's a little bit of a problem. How can you steal from a mace? So he assumes that you can.
Well, yeah.
Hmm?
I guess.
He assumes that you can, even though it's not... It's not so simple.
I mean, does he say you're allowed to steal from a mace in all capacities? Like you can't.
Yeah, he assumes that you have the state. He assumes that you have possession over. Well, who owns the estate? Meaning the children own the estate. The Yerushim own the estate. But he assumes that the mace owns his own body. So he says like this. So wait a minute. He says even according to the other Rishonim, not just Rashi. He says why? Rashi says he thinks according to Rashi, you're just not allowed to do it. And according to Tosfos, you're allowed to do it as long as I pay you back, right? I'm allowed to take your money as long as I pay you back. That's how he wants to read Tosfos and almost all the other Rishonim. He says, yeah, what if I can't pay you back? What if it's just not possible for me to pay you back?
Well, we don't make that assumption.
Well, you're dead. So I can't pay you back. Well, I mean you, by the way. I never, God forbid. Let's say the person who's dead. If I steal from him, I can't pay him back because he's dead. He says, then even Tosfos would agree it's forbidden. Right? Tosfos would say, normally you can steal to save someone's life as long as you pay him back. If it's not possible to pay him back, because the guy's dead, you're not allowed to.
It doesn't seem to make sense both ways, that you could steal from a mace, but you can't pay him back. I get you can't pay him back with an organ, but...
I can't even compensate him for it.
But if he's got an estate or belongings enough that you can steal from him, it seems odd that you can't pay it back.
Right.
You
know, so he assumes that. Right. So he assumes that there's going to be a difference between the monetary wealth and the person's own organs. Right. The monetary wealth belongs to the Yorsim, and the person's body belongs to him. But he's assuming. So he must be assuming that the organs don't belong to the Yorsim. Right, if the organs belong to the Yorsim, he's making a distinction between the person's body and everything beyond the person's body.
It's all this, theoretical kind of belonging situation.
So he's making a distinction.
In there.
So he's making a distinction between the person's body, which belongs to him, and his possessions and wealth, which belongs to his Yorsim.
I understand, but even if you're just working in the realm of just body parts, you put another liver inside,
You're saying he doesn't need it anyway. Take out the bad one from the guy who's transplanted, you got to put it back.
Wait, what?
If I'm taking out, let's say this is, you're waiting for a liver, right?
Yeah.
So I'm going to take out your liver and give you the dead guy, right? The dead guy's liver. So I'll put your liver in him. I'll actually have an extra liver to use it. You're saying,
right,
I'm supporting your position.
Right,
I'm saying, I'll actually have an extra
organ.
But I'm not paying him back. Right, it's not the same.
Yeah, I guess not, but it's not.
Yeah. So he's also not, he's talking about like doing a dissection on him to learn something to save someone else. Right? The transplants weren't really in existence then.
The whole premise of the Binyan Zion is that the robbery is considered Mi'ilah, right?
Mi'ilah is considered robbery. That was one of his riots, yeah.
Well, are there cases in the Gemara that make a distinction between Mi'ilah and Geneva?
Yeah, so he's just trying to say that case in Rashi from the Uber Seiricha, when it's Mi'ilah, it's forbidden. Why? Because it's stealing. But you're right, I see where you're going, but he wants to say that any type of theft would be a problem. So those Mi'ilahs, which would be a case of stealing, would be a problem.
An organ donor. Mm-hmm. Who has one of those cards that's
well, let's say he was mochel,
right?
So he says that would be fine,
right?
Because you can be mochel if it's your money, right? You can't. Well, that's what we said before. I can't say take my life. If someone comes to me and holds a gun to my head and says shoot him, otherwise I'll kill you. You can't say no. It's okay. Shoot me.
This is reequating organs and possessions again.
This is Binyan Zion. He's equating the organs and possessions. He's saying it's Binyan Zion l'shitasei. He's being consistent. He's saying I can't steal if I can't pay him back to save someone else's life. But if it's not called stealing, because if the guy was mochel, if he said, no, take my money, well, he had to have said it before he died. But he said, take my money, it's okay to take my money, it's not really stealing. So if he was mochel, then it would be okay. Now, the Binyan Zion isn't talking about organ transplants, right? The Binyan Zion was living a long time ago. Organ transplants are only in like the 1950s. He's talking about like autopsies and dissections. So he says, who in the world would want themselves, he says, who in the world would ever agree to this? But with organs, it might be more conceivable. Right. No, he's not talking about taking organs.
Yes,
I'm extending it. Let's say I can cut someone open and learn something from him. There's mamash pikuach nefesh right now. Can I cut him open to see how deep the incision was, how bad the infection was? I'm going to treat the patient who's lying right next to me. He thinks that the nivel ames is also stealing. I'm taking away his body.
Right.
Or taking it out to study, or I'm using it in some way. He thinks that's stealing also.
Okay.
But he thinks that's also stealing, and certainly taking the organ would be stealing. I was just using taking the organ because it makes more sense now, and it's actually stealing. He thinks even that's stealing. So that would be forbidden. Okay? So that's a Binyan Zion. We don't paskin like a Binyan Zion. Most people don't paskin like a Binyan Zion. But it's important because he's the only one who says it, so it comes up sort of. Yeah?
Wait, so he says if you are able to pay him back or intend to, then it's
okay. So he thinks it's Machalkes Rashi and Tosfos. He thinks according to Rashi, you can never steal to save a life. And according to Tosfos, you can steal if I intend to pay you back. But that's only when I'm capable of paying you back, meaning at least you're
capable
off.
Capable or intend to?
Intend to and capable.
Okay.
Meaning you have to be alive so I can pay you back, and I also have to intend to pay you back. How does the intent work? It's a little bit more complicated. So let's leave at least capable.
So, did we ever say that a family is permitted to opt in for an autopsy?
So that's a question. According to the Binyan Zion, can the family agree?
Well, seemingly no, because if you can't pay the family back, then it's not there.
Right, so according to the Binyan Zion, no. So we said before, though, so we had three opinions. Right? You have Binyan Zion. Then we had Rav Shlomo Zalman Auerbach, who said, of course you take the organ. You don't need consent. The guy's dead. And he thinks, no, meaning this isn't a problem. It's A, not stealing. It's an organ. It's not possession. It doesn't actually belong to anybody. Of course, Rav Shlomo Zalman says, you in theory don't even need consent, which makes a lot of sense, right? It's pikuach nefesh. You don't need consent. Rav Moshe Feinstein thinks, I think we talked about this, he thinks that, no, you actually need the family's consent because it's their responsibility to bury the body. You're taking that away from them. You need their consent to do it. And you need specifically the family's consent. What do you do if the person, is mochel nechayim, signed a card of some sort? I'm not sure how most fines would have dealt with that. What if the family then objected? What if the guy said, do it, and the family objected? I'm not sure.
I mean, but it's his choice.
Well, if it's the family's responsibility to bury the body.
Under the condition where they serve the surrogates.
Well, the guy's dead. He's not serving as surrogates.
But if he signs something before.
So according to Rav Moshe, who says that you need the family's consent because it's the family who's responsible for burial, what the guy wanted is sort of irrelevant. You don't have a say.
He's dead now. But if he was alive and said, I want my body to be built for autopsies and sections or organ donations, what does it matter with that?
Because according to Rav Moshe, it's the family.
He's dead while he's alive.
So what? Once he's dead, it's the family's responsibility to bury him. Regardless of what he said.
There's no point of any sort of, last
likely, one. Yeah. No, not last one. Let's not talk about advanced directives. No, leave those out. Those include, advanced directives include other things as well. You mean specifically signing an organ donor card. Maybe according to Rav Moshe, it wouldn't matter because you need the family consent anyway. So, American law, you need the family's consent anyway.
Even if the guy signs it?
I'm pretty sure that that's the case. If the person signed it...
If he's competent...
So the problem is he can't give consent right now. He's dead.
But he gave consent before he died.
Right, so let's say you give consent to surgery right now, and I am your power of attorney. I am your attorney. I am your proxy, right? And now, unfortunately, you're no longer conscious, and you gave consent. I can revoke that consent.
No, they have to prove insanity.
No. Let's say you're out. You're out.
If he had signed consent before...
No, I can revoke it.
You can't...
I'm standing in your stead.
As my lawyer, you would act under...
You're right. In theory.
Right.
First of all, we should just know, it's just important, you don't need a lawyer to be a proxy. Anyone can be a proxy. Everyone should have a proxy. A proxy means that if you are not able to make decisions, somebody makes them for you. Right? It's important that everyone have that. God forbid, no one should ever need it. I have one. It's my wife. It shouldn't be the state or some judge. It should be someone who you know and love and trust. Not that judges are evil, but it should be someone you know and love and trust. There are proxy forms on the web. It could be anyone you want. Two people have to sign it. It does not have to be notarized. You just need two random people in the room to sign it, and you should talk to that person. Very important. We don't like to do these things. Sorry to give the most issues right now. People don't like to talk about end-of-life things, but it's important to talk about it when you're not near the end-of-life, so you actually can do it calmly. But let's say I'm your proxy, and you signed an advance directive. I don't want a ventilator. I want a DNR. I don't want anything. Then you're unconscious. I can revoke all of that. I am speaking from your mouth. Now, the only way for the hospital to say, no, you're crazy, is they have to prove that I am acting in willful negligence of what you wanted, and I am acting against what you've said. Now, all I have to say is, well, he changed his mind.
Like Shaivo.
Shaivo was more complicated. We'll talk about Shaivo after Sukkot. We'll talk about Tari Shaivo after Sukkot.
Maybe somebody won't appoint a proxy for that very reason.
Okay, so you have to, so you appoint a proxy that you trust.
No, I'm saying that would go against what he had...
Right, so you have to find me. Okay, you could do what, right, you can, or you can't, but it can become a little bit more complicated. New York just passed a law last year. So let's say you don't have a proxy. What happens? And you don't have an advance directive. There's a surrogate. There's a surrogate decision maker and there's a proxy. Usually they mean the same thing. They both are speaking as if they are you. Okay? So if a person is either, for whatever reason, they can't make decisions on their own, either because they're unconscious or they're crazy. And you need a psychiatrist to come and say that they're mentally incapacitated to make this. They don't have decision-making capacity. Now, you cannot have decision-making capacity with regard to one thing and be completely normal in other areas. So the psychiatrist makes a decision. It used to be in New York, they passed a law to change this, that in order to turn off a ventilator or to stop nutrition, you needed to be a proxy or a surrogate with clear and convincing evidence that that's what the person wanted. Right? So some old people do this. They have conversations with their surrogates. They don't have a proxy. They said, look, my friend just had this. You know, I'm 120 years old. My friend was 119. They just had all this artificial nutrition. I don't want it. With young people, when this happens, unfortunately, often they don't have proxies and they never talked about these things. And then these are famous cases in U.S. law, which we'll talk about. Names are escaping me right now. But they're famous cases in U.S. law. Karen Quinlan is one of them in New Jersey. And what happened was these were young women who, for whatever reason, became terribly devastated neurologically, and they wanted to remove therapy. And they didn't have clear and convincing evidence. right? Now this person was acting as a surrogate, not a proxy, as a surrogate. Question was, could they remove therapy? So in New Jersey, they said yes. Turn off a ventilator and stop nutrition. And the surrogate is your next of kin. The state law defines that. So in most states, a surrogate can do those things. In New York and Louisiana, a surrogate cannot remove therapy without clear and convincing evidence that that's what you wanted. That was until last summer. Last summer, they changed it. So it did make a difference if you were a proxy or a surrogate. There was another case in Louisiana where they said no, that they couldn't do it.
They changed it from
that a surrogate now has just the powers of a proxy. But a surrogate is assigned by the state who the surrogate is, meaning there's a rule, there's a hierarchy who becomes your surrogate. You can choose to be your proxy. It could be anybody you want. It could be someone you don't know. I mean, it should be someone you know, but it could be anyone on the planet. As long as and you should have more than one in case the person's not reachable and the decision needs to be made. Anyway, so the proxy can say, I'm speaking on his behalf, he would have changed his mind. Right? So the family, in theory, can do that also. So after the person dies, you need his consent to take his organs. And now you can't take, now if the family's acting as his proxies, they can say no. And unless then you can go to, the hospital can then go to court and prove that the proxy is not acting in the best interest of the patient, they will rarely ever do that. It will take too long and the organs won't be useful. You can do that in other cases also. I did a rotation in Columbia. They have a medical ethics consult. So they had sometimes a question of this. Is the, I guess we'll talk about this later, but there was a patient who came in. He was drugged and overdosed, lost his job, terrible story. Wife was very successful, blah, 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 blah. He was very athletic, and this was all his whole life, you know. And he came in, and he was completely zonked. He was overdosed. And they ventilated him and tried working on him. And the wife came to the attendings and said, well, what are the chances of him getting a full recovery? Full, 100% recovery. They said, I'm making up the numbers, I don't remember the details, I'll find it for you next time, or when we talk about it. He said, like, 20% chance of making a full recovery, but 80% chance that he'll recover 80%. Okay? He won't be the same man he was, but 80% chance that he'll recover full, and there's a 20% chance, maybe a 60% chance he'll recover 80%, and there's a 20% chance that he'll recover only like 60%.
Like mentally or physically?
Mentally and physically, overall. She said, okay, stop all therapy. Yes. If you can't guarantee me that he will make 100% recovery, I don't want anything done. It's a little bit crazy. I mean, no one can guarantee anything ever, especially in these situations. And they didn't know what to do. Like, in this case, is she acting in his... Is that a normal thing to ask?
Does it matter, right?
Well, it does. Meaning, normally, we listen to the proxy unless we can prove that she's crazy. Meaning,
matter,
if the proxy's crazy... Well, right, unless I can prove that the proxy's crazy,
right,
or that the proxy's blatantly contradicting that which we know the patient wanted. Now, you can always say the patient changed his mind, right? So it's hard. So you'll never win in court. So they didn't take it to court. No hospital wants to go to court over these things, and it will take too long anyway. What happened was, after a couple of days, they didn't know what to do. They stopped therapy. And they turned off the ventilator, and he started breathing on his own. And he made it, and he was that 20% of patients who only recovered 60% of his functioning. And she wanted to sue the hospital for that.
Well, he was...
I said there was 20% full recovery, 60% 80% recovery, and 20% 60% recovery, and he was in that lower percent who only recovered 60% of his mental ability. It could be, but that's what she wanted. Because she said you should have taken it off earlier when I demanded it originally. Had you taken it off when I demanded it originally, he would have died on the spot. It was like a wrongful life suit. Right? Okay, it's a little bit interesting. And then when she came to the hospital, he's like, now only 60% of his mental faculties. And then she took him to like the administration and started yelling, you see what he did to my husband? It was a whole mess. It was resolved.
So, what were better that she... better than
I am assuming about money.
She got money?
I'm assuming someone got money. I don't know exactly how it was resolved. Everyone gets money in the end. They'd be quiet. Right? No one wants to deal with these things. But in theory, that was a case where they were debating what to do. But they listened to her in the end and he... made it. Whether it was because they took him off or not, they don't know. Had they taken him off earlier, like that night, when she demanded to take him off 6 hours after he was on, he would have most likely died.
Most likely, but how do you prove that he would have died?
Well, he would have likely... I think the doctors already were mowed at that. It could have been likely. Meaning, her claim made sense. It wasn't like crazy. Would they be able to prove it or not? I don't know. Anyway, fine. So that's Abinion C. And Abinion C. has one more proof that he has a question against him. And we'll do it only because it has relevance to the question of brain death, which we'll also talk about after Sukkos. And the connection to brain death is not obvious, so don't worry about it right now. The Gemara in Erechin Erchin Zainam et Aleph is talking about, let me see if I have it, is talking about giving the death penalty, right? So what do you do if a pregnant woman deserves the death penalty? Any takers? What do you do?
Depends on how far along she is.
Okay, how far along is she?
Not far along at all.
So the Gemara, so why not just wait, right? Why not just wait? She's 2 months pregnant, 3 months pregnant, so I just wait. The Gemara says that's called evil, that's not fair to her to make her wait with the death sentence. We don't want people on death row, right? That's not a good thing to sit on death row knowing that you're going to be killed. The Gemara assumes that's not right, and so we don't want to do that.
What did you hear in
Argo? I have no idea. I mean, people sit on death row for years here.
Right, so maybe they wait for the
end. You know, so like, whatever. Yeah. So the Gemara assumes that you kill her while she's pregnant. Right? And not only do you kill her while she's pregnant, you kill the baby first. You try to kill the baby first. You're supposed to hit her on the stomach to kill the baby first. The Gemara assumes that after she's killed, that if the baby would try to get out, that would be nivel ames to her. The baby's going to die anyway. The baby's not going to make it. It would be nivel ames to her. And so we want to make sure that the baby dies. We mean, you want to do it in the humane way. Make sure the baby dies.
Does it matter how far along in the case?
Yes. So the Gemara says, Yashva la mashver, once she's sitting on the birth stool, we'll talk about the birth stool, whatever that means. She's in labor. No. She's in labor. Labor, like.
And she killed a guy?
Maybe she killed a guy yesterday, now she's in labor.
Yeah.
Or she violated Shabbos. Right? You can get death penalty for doing a lot of things.
Right.
Okay? So what do you do? Then you wait. If she's Yashva la mashver, then you wait. Skila. Sure, you get Skila. Right, you knock you down, then yeah, it's not so good. Whatever. Anyway, so then we wait. So the Gemara wants to say, right, the Gemara, so that's the case of the Gemara. Just, that's the background. The Gemara then has a question, what if a woman dies while she's a regular woman? She's not obligated to the death penalty, right? She's not convicted of anything. A normal, nice woman. She dies in childbirth. Okay? So the Gemara says, once she's young, you can then violate Shabbos if necessary. Well, the Gemara says, oh, so what can you do? The Gemara says you can do a post-mortem cesarean section to try to save the baby. She's dead, right? So you can cut her open to try to save the baby.
Is that all fun?
The baby's right there. Well, we're trying,
yeah.
And she's dead.
I mean, it's
So the Gemara says, well, of course, it's obvious. Poch nefesh. There's not. You can even violate Shabbos. I mean, what's the problem to cut open the dead body? So the Gemara says, it's Begoch Nefesh, so of course it's Mutter. So you can even violate Shabbos. If you have to carry a knife through the Rishus HaRabim, you can violate Shabbos to do this. Okay? So the Maram Shik asked the Binyan Siyam, according to you, isn't it Nivela Mace? Are you cutting open the woman to save the baby? Right? So you see, the Gemara said, it's Begoch Nefesh, you violate Shabbos. The Gemara wasn't even concerned that it's Nivela Mace. Why? Why was the Gemara not concerned that it's Nivela Mace? Because it's not one of the big three. It's Pekuach Nefesh. Nivel HaMeis, what do you mean? Once they told me I can violate Shabbos, I can certainly violate Nivel HaMeis, and the Gemara doesn't even care. So it proves you wrong. Right? This is Maram Shik asked to the Binyan Siyam. He says, it proves you wrong. Yeah.
I wanted to ask something about the, killing a woman with brain.
Yeah.
You want to finish it?
Yeah, let's just finish this. We'll talk about that another point with the brain death, because it really... It's not intuitive how it comes up. Yeah.
This was the Maram Shik against the...
The Maram Shik asked this question to the Binyan Siyam. Uh-huh. He says, this Gemara proves you wrong. Because here you cut open the woman, which is Nivel HaMeis, to save a baby, which is Pekuach Nefesh, and the Gemara doesn't seem to care. The Gemara says, once it's Mutter, you can violate Shabbos. And the Gemara doesn't seem to care, it's Nivel HaMeis. According to you, A, the Gemara should care, and B, it should be prohibited. Right? So incidentally, the halacha now is that we don't do this. The Rama says, based on the Tshuva Sagonim, maybe based on the Tshuva Sagonim, based on the Issur Heter, that today the minig is that we don't do this, even during the weekday, we don't cut open the woman, we don't do a post-mortem cesarean, because we ain't anu bekiyim b'misas ha'im b'kiruv kol kach. We're not exactly sure when the mother dies. We can't be precisely sure. And so if you cut open the stomach of a dying woman, you're going to certainly hasten her death. You're not allowed to. This is the Rama writing in 15, whatever. Okay? And the Issur Heter writing before him. He goes, nowadays, then, we don't do this because we're not b'misas ha'im b'kiruv kol kach. We don't know when she dies exactly. So if we cut her open, we're going to kill her, and you can't kill one person to save another. So we don't do this. Okay? That's what he says. So,
nowadays, you wouldn't do it.
If you knew that she was vaday dead, how do you know that someone's dead? We'll talk about it. If you knew that she was certainly dead, right? So the point is, so some people point out, you see, you can never know when death is precisely because the Rama said we don't know. So the Shvus Yaakov was asked the question. Treasure, right? So some people can say prove from this today also, because you never know precisely the moment of death. So there's supposed to be, and you can't know. The Friday statement is you can't know.
Is there any kind of reasoning in terms of her definitely dying? Like, you know, we were talking about the other day in terms of like somebody that's right on the verge of dying.
Well, she's on the verge of dying, right?
Right.
She was. So how do you know when she's dead? So now you can also imagine that back in the day.
With the blood redder kind of thing, you know, with one being.
No, so if she's dying, I can't kill her. It doesn't matter. Once she's alive, I cannot kill her to save the baby, no matter what. No matter if she's dying or not. So they probably prove that you can never know when someone is dying or when the moment of death precisely is. So Shvis Yaakov was asked the following question. Yaakov Reicher. He was asked by a guy. He said, I was a witness to a hanging execution of a pregnant woman by some government in Europe. And after she was beheaded. The woman was beheaded, and she was pregnant. And he, after she fell to the ground or whatever it was, he ran up and tried to cut open her stomach to do a postmortem cesarean and try to save the baby. I think it was even Shabbos. He was not successful. So does he need to do tshuva for what he did? A, it may have been Shabbos, I don't remember. And B, he violated this Rama. Right? So that's what Shvus Yaakov said. He said, no, it's not. There's not an inherent problem. Is that we can't possibly know when death is. It's just normally we don't. You have to realize there's no EKG. How do you know someone's not breathing? How do you tell someone's not breathing?
With
a feather. And how long do you leave the feather there exactly? Right? Proving that someone's not breathing is proving a negative. Right? It's not simple. You're proving that he's not breathing with a feather. Not the most precise science. Even if I'm looking for a heartbeat and feeling a pulse, I mean, I know that I'm not the most experienced person. I'm very well aware. I've been talking to very elderly people and not been able to feel their pulse. And they're talking to me, I know they're alive. I can't feel their pulse. I know he has one. Doesn't mean he's dead. Right? It's not always so straightforward. That's his point. He goes, when she's beheaded, she's dead. When she's dead, you certainly can do it. So this is not a problem. He said, it's just an impractical impediment. So today, as long as we can define when death occurs, and we'll talk about that a lot, we can define when death occurs, then we can deal with it. So anyway, Maram Shik, yeah.
I have to ask him that question.
We'll get back. Let me just the Maram Shik. We'll answer if it needs to answer. So the Rama was this was before. The Shvus Yaakov was after. The Rama doesn't deal with the beheading.
I mean, so what did the Shvus Yaakov?
He said it was fine. You don't need to. You did the right thing. He says she was dead. The Rama is talking about where a case where I don't know if she's dead. She died naturally. You know, most women in labor aren't beheaded, and that's not what the Rama was talking about. She has meis alamah. She died in childbirth. Right? Let's leave, you know, some exceptions. She died in childbirth, and you can't tell precisely. It's a practical impediment. That's what the Shvus Yaakov point was. We'll get back to Shvus Yaakov later, just to fill in the gaps. So the Binyan, the Maram Shik says, you see from this Gemara that you're wrong, because you could do Nevel HaMesa, save the baby. Right? So the Binyan Tzion says, no, that Gemara is different.
Wait, so you can?
The Maram Shik proves from this Gemara, you do Nivel HaMeis to save the baby. You cut open the mother's abdomen. The Gemara says you do it. The Rama says today we're not the king. The Gemara says you do it. So he says you see from this Gemara, you cut open the woman and save the baby. That's Nivel HaMeis. We go off Nefesh. I thought you told me you can't do that.
The Rama
just says nowadays we're not the king. Maybe back in the day they were the king. That's what he says.
Seems to be going downward.
Yes.
I still have a question.
Okay, well, let me just answer the Binyan Tzion's question. The Binyan Tzion has an answer. He says, you have three answers. He says the first answer is Nivel HaMeis is only when it's done derech bizayon. It's done in a denigrating manner. It's done in a not nice way. Here it's opening her abdomen in a C-section. That's people do this, you know, when you're alive also. It's not something you just do to dead people to cut them open. It is actually a surgical procedure to try to save a baby. That's something we do to living people as well. That's not Nivel HaMeis. He says the second answer is that you see from certain times in the Gemara that Nivel HaMeis might be permissible for certain cases of Yerusha, and this baby certainly falls within that category. That's a little bit complex, we'll see that out. And the third one he says is, the third answer he says, well, here, she's creating the Pikuach Nefesh. Right? Normally, I want to know, here, she's creating the Pikuach Nefesh. If she wasn't there, the baby would live. Right? It's her body that's creating the Pikuach Nefesh, and therefore it's not considered Nivel HaMeis. when her body is creating the gofen nefesh, then they can cause it, right? When I need to steal your money's not really being involved in it. You're not causing the gofen nefesh. If I need to take your organ once you're dead, your body's not causing the gofen nefesh. Something else is causing the gofen nefesh. So then it's nivel ha-meis. Here he says, when the body of the meis itself is causing the gofen nefesh, then it's not a problem with nivel ha-meis.
So she's the rodeh?
Let's leave the word rodeh out of it. She's causing the problem.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
The body of the mace is causing the gofen nefesh in order.
Indirectly. Very indirectly. Here it's very direct.
How?
Here it's direct because the baby's inside her.
Okay, and in this case, the organ is inside the person.
Right, but the person's.
The mace,
you see the difference between this person, I can take any person, right? Any dead man's organ would save this guy. The dead person has no relationship to the person who needs to be saved. Here, the dead body is creating the situation of the gofen nefesh. Meaning there it's very direct. Here it's very direct. It's her body that's creating it, so there's no nivel ha-meis to prevent that. Yeah, what was your question from before?
My question was, if you're going to, not save the baby, let's say when a woman is sentenced to death, it seems to be violating the halakhic standpoint on abortion.
We'll talk about abortion. So some people unprove this more, there's no purpose of abortion. Maybe. Or maybe there is, but it's set aside in certain circumstances. We'll talk about that. But halacha ma'aseh is forbidden. How do you deal with this gemara is a different story. Yeah. Okay? So that was, I only brought up this gemara because it's interesting and we will deal with it later. And we'll deal with it later in another context. So the Maharam Sheikh thought this was a proof against the Binyan Sea and the Binyan Sea. I said, no, this case is very different for one of those three reasons. Okay. Now let's move on quickly to, okay, any questions on the Binyan Sea? Almost everybody disregards the Binyan Siyan, and it's just he's the one person who talks about this, and so he's interesting. So halacha l'maaseh, almost everyone, again, says it's permissible, consent or not, some machlokes. Okay, what about if it's not pikuach nefesh? Right, what about, can I use someone's organ to say to, for a non pikuach nefesh person? Let's say cornea. Let's say we assume blindness is not pikuach nefesh. Okay? And can I take the person's cornea, can I take a cornea from a cadaver? Cornea is the front lens, it's not the lens, it's the front external part of your eye to help someone else see. And we're assuming that vision, again, is not pikuach nefesh. What do you think? So can you do nivel ha-meis to violate an iser lav? A prohibition, can you violate a prohibition for non-pikuach nefesh?
No.
No, right? It seems like not. So there's a shach. The Shach, one of the Perushim on Shulchan Aruch in Yerodea, so he says, let's introduce a new topic, a concept. He says, well, there's Pikuach Nefesh, right? We have different types of people who are sick, right? We have, and this is relevant to Shabbos, we have a Chola Sheyesh Bo Sakana. Chola is a sick person who has within him danger, right? A sick person whose life is in danger, or even questionably in danger. Then we have a chola, she'ein bo sakana. He's sick, but his life is not in danger. Right? So for chola she'yesh bo sakana, we violate every mitzvah in the Torah, except for the big three.
So
right?
What does it mean he's sick?
This person, let's say you're sick. Let's say you have strep.
Okay.
You have strep throat, which I think is actually a chola she'yesh bo sakana. Let's find something else. Anything, you have a cold. You're in bed. You have the flu. Is your life in danger?
Broken
leg, let's say. Meaning, no. So then there's a third category called the Mechush Ba'alma.
Is that a broken leg?
Maybe. A Mechush Ba'alma is, a Mechush is like a feeling. Ba'alma means general. You have this general not good feeling, and maybe there's also something called a Miktas Choli, a little bit sick. A Chola She'en Bo Sakana is someone who's actually sick, right? He has the flu. He's just not, you're not going to die from the flu. Right? I mean, we take the flu seriously, and we're assuming you're a healthy person, you're not going to die from the flu, but you're still sick. Right? So you can take medicine on Shabbos, for example. Normal, healthy people can't take medicine on Shabbos. Of course, you're going to take medicine on Shabbos. Right?
Why
so,
a healthy person take medicine on Shabbos?
We'll talk about it.
What are preventative medicine?
We'll talk about it.
Like a gout? Like a
we'll talk, don't worry, extensively. Probably next semester this week, but we'll see. Fine. So in Cholos Einbo Sakana, there's a subcategory of Sakana's Aver. A danger to a limb. Not life, just limb. So let's say you're not dying, but you might lose that limb. right? So the limb doesn't necessarily have to fall off. Reb Chaim Na, we'll talk about this also extensively. Reb Chaim Na says Sakanas Aver, and almost everybody passing like this Reb Chaim Na, I think. He says it doesn't mean you have to lose the limb. It's not like your eye's going to fall out necessarily. It means it just won't function normally like it did before. Right? So a person who's blind, he thinks is Bisakanas Aver. Right? Because he can't see. His eye didn't fall out, it didn't disintegrate, but it's Sakanas Aver. Right? If a person's arm, a person dislocates his shoulder, breaks his shoulder, you may have a Sakana, you may have Sakanas Nefashos, right? It might, if you impinge on the artery or something, let's say it's not. That's it. But if you don't set it properly, you won't have full range of motion. That's Sakanas Aver. So the Shach in Yoredei says that you're allowed to violate a negative prohibition, anus or lav, for Sakanas Aver, just not Shabbos. Right, on Shabbos, we'll see you cannot violate a prohibition, minatorah, a negative prohibition, to for Sakanas Aver in a normal fashion. You can do it b'shinui, you can't do it in a normal fashion. Right, on Shabbos, you're not allowed to violate Shabbos for Sakanas Aver, right, even in Isser Lav, but.
Well, you can b'derek shinui.
B'derek shinui, but we'll talk about b'shinui, don't worry about that.
So what you say, you're allowed to violate Isser Lav, but not Shabbos?
According to the Shach, for the sake of Sakanas Aver, you can violate an Isser Lav. Except for Shabbos.
Why? So Shabbos is one of the four now?
Shabbos is... No, you can't violate an Isser Lav. Your life's not in danger here, right? You're just not going to have full range of motion of your arm. You can't violate Shabbos straight out. Okay?
So why is Shabbos special?
Hmm?
Why is Shabbos special?
So the Egle Tal wants to know why Shabbos is different. So the Egle Tal and the Hakadamah, to the Egle Tal and the Never Seed, the Avnei Nezer... It's a very famous Hakadamah, the Egle Tal. The Egle Tal wants to know there in the Hakadamah, are you allowed to be happy in learning Torah? Can learning Torah create a happiness within you? Or otherwise, are you not learning properly? If learning Torah creates such a simcha, maybe you're not learning seriously enough. Right. Apparently that was, not the name, it was Chassidus, it was a Sakha Chava Rebbe. So apparently that was a common thought process back in the day. And so he writes specifically, no, the proper way to learn Torah is to be simple when you learn it. That's the what Torah should be doing to you. It's not a problem in your learning, it's actually a better way. Anyway, so in that Hakdama, he talks about Shabbos. And he says, Shabbos is skula connected kol mitzvahs, right? The Gemara says that Shabbos, if you put Shabbos in one side of a scale and all the mitzvahs on the other, they're equal. Problem is that the Gemara says that about a lot of mitzvahs. Tzitzit is skula connected kol mitzvahs. Shabbos is skula connected kol mitzvahs. So how do you balance out all these things that are skula connected kol mitzvahs? Whatever. The Gemara says Shabbos is skula connected kol mitzvahs. He says, therefore, in order to violate Shabbos, you need a parallel sakanas kol aguf. Your whole body has to be in b'sakana. Just as like because Shabbos is shkula connected kol mitzvahs, you have to have all the organs of your body v'sakana, which means your life. And if one organ's v'sakana, you can't violate Shabbos. I don't know if he meant this very seriously or not. So do we follow the Shach, Rabbi Schechter, when I asked him another random question about this? So he said, of course we don't follow the Shach. Because the Avnei Nezer said this is the only reason for it, and clearly that's not halachically binding. That was Rabbi Schechter. Rabbi Schechter was quoting the Egle Tal to show that certainly, you know, he was using it. So if that's the justification, certainly not. And we don't follow the Shach. Rabbi Bleich, who I asked also, he thought, no, of course we follow the Shach. And almost all the Sfarim I've seen, the Shmir Shabbos quotes the Shach, the Nishmas Avraham quotes the Shach, most modern posts quote the Shach, that we will violate Yisr Lav for Sakanas Aver. It's going to come up when we talk about an application of Tumas Kohanim. Okay, so there's going to be Yisr Lav of Nivul HaMeis. Is there Nivul HaMeis? So I can violate Nivul HaMeis, according to the Shach, for Sakanas Aver. Right? So if a person is not going to be able to see, that's at least Sakanas. It's not, let's say it's not Pikuach Nefesh. Right? But it's Sakanas Aver. You can't see anymore. Your eyes not functioning. So you can violate Yisr Lav and violate Nivul HaMeis in order to take that cornea. Okay? And what about Hana? There should be a problem of Hana min HaMeis. How do you get around the problem of Hana min HaMeis? Anyone have an idea? So either it's Shalok Eder Hanab, or Rabbi Kiva Eger said that doesn't count. Right? The Radvaz said yes, Rabbi Kiva Eger said no. Most postkim are going to follow Rabbi Kiva Eger. Shalok Eder Hanab is not going to help you. So this was asked in Israel, where most of the Mesim are Jews. So it's not going to help you to say that it's a non-Jewish body. So the answer that most of the postkim give is that it's a small quantity, that the Isser Hanab has to be a Kizayis. Right, we're talking about an Isser Hana, and Kol HaTorah Kula needs to have a shear, needs to be an amount. A cornea is very tiny, there's no Isser Hana in something so tiny.
But that wouldn't work if it's something else.
If it's what?
If
it's something more than that, that would not be sufficient, right? Some posts can, however, feel differently. So Rav Eliashiv is quoted in the Nishmas Avraham. He said, well, what about the mitzvahs kvura? You can violate the Yisr Lav. Can you, what happens to the mitzvahs kvura? You have to bury that part of the body, right? And now you're not burying it, you're putting it back into someone else. So he said, when you attach it to someone else, it doesn't become alive again. It just attached to a living person. And that person is violating the mitzvahs kvura every single moment.
That's what he said?
Yeah. That the person who got the transplant is violating the mitzvahs kvura every single moment.
Wait,
he's not talking about corneas, he's talking in general.
But it is functioning. You can just strap on a dead
leg. He said it's not alive, it's not considered living, it's attached to a living person.
Why is that
considered living?
Ein ha'ever ha'mes nehepach l'chai, it doesn't turn into chai, el mechubar l'chai. And therefore, if there's a mitzvah of kvura, you're violating a mitzvah of kvura every day. So there's a question, is there a mitzvah of kvura in less than kezayis? Let's say you have less than kezayis of a mace. Do you have to do, is there a mitzvah of kvura on each and every less than kezayis? So many poskim assume not. So the cornea, again, which is less than kezayis, will be mutter. But using another organ, which is more than kezayis, would not be. He says, with his no pikuach nefesh, you violate the mitzvah d'oraisa every day of kvura, as long as it's more than kezayis, and therefore it won't be permissible. Even with the shach, Rav Neuwirth thinks, he says similarly, that also you're violating the mitzvah's kvura every single moment that you're not burying that organ.
Is there any elaboration on like why he doesn't consider it chai? He just says it's chai is attached to chai.
He assumes once something is dead, it's considered to be dead.
You keep them alive.
Things don't know. So he says people are alive, organs aren't alive. When a person dies, everything within him, he doesn't care about cells. The halacha doesn't care about the cells. The halacha is considered, is this have a halachic status of living or the halachic status of dead? If it's in a dead person, everything within a dead person has the halachic status of dead. Right? He's saying everything within a dead person has a halachic status of dead. I don't care what you do with it after. It's dead. Once it's dead, it can't change.
But are you saying, when you say that the mitzvah kvura is only incumbent upon that which is greater than kezayis?
According to the most poskim. So for the cornea, it's not going to be an issue.
Are you looking at, like, you know, in the cases where there were always those explosions in Israel, right? And
yeah, so we do it.
There were less kezayis scattered around.
So is there a mitzvah d'oraisa? According to those poskim, not. Should you do it anyway? Yeah. I mean, just why not?
I'm saying, like,
yes.
To get, like, because there are those people who come in after bombing.
Yeah, and we do it. We try our best. Meaning, because there's nothing standing in your way. Here, there's at least Sakanas Aver standing in your way. Right? So we'll allow Mokum Sakanas Aver. Here, it's just, there's no reason not to, and it's kind of gross.
Is it mitzvah?
Right, in the you know, terror explosions, there may not be a mitzvah de rice in each and every lesson of Kazayas, but it's still a good thing to do, and it's kind of gross not to do it. Right. So then there's no reason not to. Okay? On this specific issue, Rav Unterman was one of the chief rabbis of Israel. He wrote the Shevet Yehuda, one of the first really starting to deal with modern medical issues. He says, like you were suggesting before, he says, whoa, when you connect the organ to a living person and blood starts flowing through it again, it's alive. There's no mitzvah kvura. You only have to bury dead tissue, dead people. Who says it can't come back to life? We talked about this in Gemara in Nida, right? It says, so Eliyahu HaNavi, we know this Tosfos also, Eliyahu HaNavi, right, was called in, he helped this woman have a baby, right? Right, she couldn't have a baby, and he used to stay there all the time, and he said, what bracha can I give you? And, right, she has a baby on his tefillah, then the baby dies, the child dies, so she calls Eliyahu, and Eliyahu comes and revives the child. I remember if it's Eliyahu or Elisha, the Gemara is asking about. Elisha does pretty much the same thing. So the Gemara says, Ben HaShunamis, the child of this woman, Ma'u Sheyetame Be'ol. Is he Mitame? Does he create Tuma? Which we'll talk about, maybe not today, that's right. But does he create Tuma or not? Right? Now he's alive.
He's revived?
Yeah, he's revived. So what's the Gemara's answer? Meis Mitame Ven Chai Mitame. Dead people are Mitame, living people are Mitame. So Rutherford says the same thing about organs. Dead organs are mitame, living organs aren't mitame. And the same way that there's no tumah, there's no isur hana. He says, if it's not tame, it's not an isur hana, because you see from the fact that, not that they're linked, not that the tumah causes the isur hana, but he says, you see from the fact that there's no tumah, that is considered alive. If it's alive, there's no isra'an law. Right? So that's Rav Unterman's piece on that. So many people accept this. Many, many people, almost every posting accepts this on some level. That when you do any transplant from a cadaver, why is there no tumma? Forget the iser. And you're not a kohen, or you are a kohen, goch nefesh, fine. But when you walk into a room, are you causing tumma in that room? Right? We'll talk about that. But most poskim assume that once it's reattached and blood flows through it, it's not tummy anymore because it's alive. If it's alive, he says, no, it's Rana. So if Shlomo Zalman said, whoa. Before you attached it to the living guy, even before you transplanted it, everyone agrees it was dead, right? Right. You violated a mitzvah's kvura. Right? The moment you took it out of the dead guy and you didn't bury it, you violated mitzvah's kvura.
Who has this?
Rav Shlomo Zalman Orbach. It's in Nishmas Avraham. And he says, and therefore that doesn't work. That only works when it was the same organ comes back to life. When there was a mitzvah's kvura in between, then you can't say what the Rav Unterman's trying to say. Right? Rav Unterman's right. By the Ben Ashunamis, he was dead, then he came back to life. So then his whole body came back to life, it's considered as if he was never dead. Here, I violated the mitzvah's kvura in between. Right? I took it out, I should have been burying it, and who told you that you can go and then permanently be mevatel this mitzvah's kvura? You're saying, I'm going to take this organ, this whatever, and I'm going to implant it into someone. This is not a life-saving organ again, right? Right? So we're not saving anyone's life here. And you're implanting it into someone, and I'm going to say, by doing this, I'm going to cancel from this organ the mitzvah's kvura. You're not allowed to do that.
I can't retroactively work.
So he says, because you did it this, or it doesn't work.
So you can't. So he's saying transplants don't work overall.
He says. So he says like this. No, we're talking about. Pikuach nefesh. Even if it's isra no, whatever it is. We're talking about non pikuach nefesh. So what organ is this? I don't know. Because corneas.
The corneas is
less than his eyes. It's not going to be isra no anyway. You have to come up with some organ like a hand transplant or something.
Could we technically say, if somebody had one good kidney, one bad kidney, and you had to take out the bad kidney just because it was actually causing problems, and you wanted to get a second one. It's not.
You have to come up with some wacky thing. So you have to come up with some wacky thing, but it doesn't really exist.
You see that, like with the eye banks, for example, that you can't just keep them in store because there's no
There's no follow-up funding.
There is however many minutes or hours or whatever before the transplant takes place, but it's almost like the shop when you're about to perform the avera of separating, but if you're about to eat it, then it's fine or something. So you're about to do something.
So he says like this. Let me read you the language. He says, "Mikol makom ha gufa shemisasek b'meis," that which you're dealing with the corpse, "la'asosu mechuber l'chai," to make it connected to the living person, right? You're going to take this organ and reconnect it to the living person so blood flows through it. "Kedei lehenos mimen," to get hana'ah from it, acharkach, "harei zech chashiv hana'ah me'achshav." It's as if you're getting hana'ah already. The very fact that you're transplanting it out of the dead guy to give it to the new guy, that's considered hana'ah right now. And that's forbidden.
This is Rav Auerbach's own answer.
Yeah, this is his thing, right? "V'achalkav deshani bitlosu," right? Okay. He says we should follow right now. Since right now, when you're taking it out, the guy's getting hana'ah from it. It's going to be put into my body. Right now I'm getting hana'ah from the fact that it's going to be put in. That's forbidden. So I'm not allowed to do it. He says, in the process, you're getting hana'ah from the process that's about to take place. It's about to come into me. Right? So that's an isur hana'ah right now. Even according to Rav Unterman, who says once the blood flows through it, there's no isur hana'ah. Yeah, but on the way to me, it's an isur hana'ah and it's forbidden. Okay? So it would seem that there's a machlokes how to deal with this doing a transplant or some other dissection or autopsy or any nivul ha'meis. For the sake of a non-pikuach nefesh, we said the shach says for the case for sakanas aver you can violate a lav, the prohibition of nivul ha'meis. What about the mitzvah saseh? So Rav Eliashiv says, yeah, you're stuck with the mitzvah saseh. You're not allowed to violate the mitzvah saseh every moment. Unless you say like Rav Unterman, that once it's connected, there's no more mitzvah saseh, there's no more isur hana, there's no more isur lav, there's nothing. And then Rav Shlomo Zalman said, yeah, even if Rav Unterman's right, on the way to me, it's a problem, and we should follow that, meaning on the way to me, I'm violating the Isra Hana, so therefore I'm not allowed to do it. Fellas, what if I did it already? So we're not going to kill you over it. But right now, before the transplant, I'm holding it in my hand, about to put it in. I'm violating Isser Hanah right now, and Rav Unterman Svar Lehakel doesn't apply, so it's forbidden. So he's saying, even according to we said, the Shach gets rid of the Sakhanas Aver problem. Rav Eliashiv said, what about the Mitzvah Kavura? We tried to get out of Mitzvah Kavura and Isser Hanah with Rav Unterman, and Rav Shlomo Zalman says, even if you're right, it's not real, because before it gets into the body, you violated it. Ke'achshav meaning, ke'achshav means we're about to do the surgery. Achshav means now. This moment that I'm taking that out of the dead guy to put into the living guy, achshav is forbidden. Okay. Right? Right now it's forbidden. It's Isser Ba'anah and it's Mitzvah Kavura. So therefore he says it doesn't, you can't then put it back in, you violate the Isser.
I think it knows more personal. When it's in the surgeon's hand, he's saying you're already over a Hanah.
Yeah.
I don't see what Hanah he's getting from having a kidney in his hand. That once he puts it in the guy, then Hanah gets activated. You know, then somebody.
So he assumes
up.
Not.
I don't think it's a
so he says.
And then once it's
you're saying
it's
back. So if someone's right, okay,
in.
I understand what you're saying. You're saying there's no right now. No one's getting benefit until it comes into me. I'm getting benefit.
So maybe you're over.
So I'll tell you that what.
Because you're delaying it in some way.
So you're first of all violating Mrs. Kavura in the process, which he says you're not allowed to do. And he says also he thinks the Hanah is already benefiting. The person's getting potential the Hanah that he's benefiting from the process beginning. Or Shlomo Zalman assumes that that's forbidden. I see your point. It's a valid point. Right. I can't. As a doctor, I can't facilitate him violating the Isser. Okay, any questions on that? Any questions on the organs for non-Pikuach Nefesh? Good. So, let's move on to a little bit of Tumas Kohanim. Not so much time, but we'll do an intro to Tumas Kohanim. And we'll talk about it a little bit. We'll see how much time we have next time. Okay. So, what causes Tuma? Tuma, ritual defilement. What causes Tuma in any way?
Yes.
Death does not cause Tuma. Death is not a thing. Things have to cause Tuma.
Dead body.
So a mace. Dead body. What else causes Tuma?
Non-dead.
A sheretz. A dead sheretz.
What is it? Four dead ones?
Like eight type of the creepy crawling creatures.
It's
what?
Just a dead one?
Yeah.
Oh.
Okay. The liquids, the dew.
No, they're machshir lekabel tuma. Different topic. Anyone else causes tuma?
Is it certain fruit?
No. You said before.
Oh, a tanach.
A who?
Tanach. Dumb.
Sifrei Kodesh. Okay, Sifrei Kodesh causes a different type of tuma.
Nice. Svarim causes tuma, but for a completely different reason.
Blood.
Blood. We're putting on the mace for a minute. A nevela, a dead carcass, causes tuma.
What's the difference between a nevela and a mace?
A mace is a human being.
Oh, the veil is
an animal.
Is a bone or something count?
But then, don't we eat those?
The veil, we don't eat the veil. The veil means an animal that died through any other means other than kosher shechita. What else causes tumah? Damnida.
So you can't go hunt it.
The blood of a menstruating woman. Shifat zera. Semen causes tumah. Right? A lot of things cause tumah.
When we say sheretz, that's an insect that's alive? Or dead?
It's one of the eight creepy crawly creatures when they're dead. Right? It's not a behemoth, so it doesn't have tumas kavura. Okay, so a kohen is only prohibited from contacting tumas meis. Okay, contrary to popular belief, perhaps, or myth busting a little bit. Kohen only dealing with meis. Okay? All these other things cause tumah, but a kohen is not prohibited. So we all touch these things, we become tumah. Right, and each one has a different process of how you become tahor again. What are the consequences of being tamei?
Mikvah.
Either you have to go to the mikvah. Well, no, that's how you purify yourself from being tamei. What are the consequences of being tamei?
Can't do the
You can't even enter the base of mikdash. Can't enter the base of mikdash. You can't eat tachim. You can't eat karbanos. You can't eat truma. Right, sifrei kodesh are mitamei, so that you don't keep your truma together with them. They used to keep the truma in the Aron Kodesh. So if you would know, oh, truma is the Kodesh, only Kohanim can eat it, we'll keep it the Sefer Torah, so we don't come to eat it by ourselves. And then they started getting mice, and the mice started eating Svarim. And so they said, well, it's Metame, so that you don't keep the truma there, because once truma is Tame, Kohen can't eat it.
So why is the mace, the truma mace, the only one that could prevent the Kohen from entering?
No, so no, every truma prevents the Kohen from entering it, okay? No one's a Kohen, right? We're not prohibited from contacting Tumah. It's just a fact. You become Tameh, And there's a process to get out of that tumah. The kohen is prohibited from contracting tumas meis. Okay? There's a prohibition. So we're going to only talk about tumas meis. A kohen is prohibited from becoming tumah meis. And not only is a kohen prohibited from becoming tumah meis, every single one of us is prohibited from being mitame a kohen. You cannot knowingly cause a kohen to be tumah. Okay?
In any of them?
Tumas Meis. Only Tumas Meis. We're only talking about Tumas Meis right now.
What happens if he does become Tumas Meis?
So he violates a prohibition, and he has to become Tahor, just like you would have to become Tahor from Tumas Meis. How do you become Tahor from Tumas Meis? You need Parah Aduma, right? You need to get the red cow, and they have to burn it, and they make Parah, and you have to count seven. You have to count 7 days. On day 3 and day 7, you have to get spritzed with the Parah Aduma water. In order to make Parah Aduma, it's very complicated. There is no Parah Aduma anymore, which we'll see has ramifications. So Tumas Meis.
Then the kohen that's doing it doesn't become the same tummy.
Oh, so this is also a popular misconception, right? Say Parah Aduma is mitame the tahor, is mitaher the tumeim. It causes tahor to the tumeim and mitame the tahorim, and it causes the person who's tahor to become tummy. Most people assume that it means that the kohen who spritzes it on the tummy person becomes tahor, and the kohen who spritzes it becomes tummy. Right? You're probably taught that. I was taught that in elementary school. It's not true.
Why are we talking?
Because people don't know. Because it says mitame tatahor. It's not true. It's not true. A person who carries a certain amount of this water becomes tame at all times. And in the process of making the water, making the afer, the ashes, right? You have to burn it on Haramishka. You have to shech the animal and burn it outside of Yerushalayim. No, you shech it.
Right, so it's not available.
No, it causes special tumah, tumas parah. Kind of, okay. Yeah. And so during that process, you have to put things in the fire, and you have to spritz keneged kodesh hakodesh. You're standing on a mountain outside the Beis HaMikdash, on Har HaMishkan, you have to spritz, or throw some of the ashes, keneged kodesh hakodesh. That person becomes tummy. The kohen who spritzes on the tummy does not become tummy. It's Rashi and Chumash. If you ever want to stump like a rabbi on a shul interview, see if he learns Rashi and Chumash. If he knows this, you can ask him who does the Parah Aduma make tummy? Yeah.
The person that carries the water also going?
Yeah, yeah. Well, let's assume it doesn't matter. He's not prohibited from becoming. There's no prohibition here. Mm-hmm. Only tumas meis causes prohibition. Okay. So what things are mitame? What things cause tumas meis?
The 7 liquids.
No, 7 liquids do not cause tumas meis. Water is not going to cause tumas meis. So what causes tumas meis? Most obvious thing, corpse. Right, corpse, okay. What else? Now we're going to have to take apart this corpse.
A certain amount of bones. Like
bones. Anything else? What about when you take apart your bone? Okay. There are a lot of parts to a body.
Skin.
Skin's interesting, only writes in Hebrew, on Samos.
An organ.
What is an organ? Halacha doesn't care about organs. All it cares about basar min hameis. There's flesh.
Is that basar?
Organs are basar, but so is muscle.
Right.
Okay? Skin is a question. Is skin yes or no?
The nails.
Nails don't cost them.
Oh.
Nails, hair, and teeth. Yeah.
Blood
just have teeth.
Huh?
What?
Blood. No, dam min hameis does not cause them. No, sorry. Dam min hameis, or revia, damba, sorry. Dam min achayim does not cause them. It's a question. Normally, we have these people who were killed. And so, how much blood came out when he was still alive, and how much blood came out when he was dead? Not sure.
Right, if you're walking in like a battle, whose blood is
good. Right, okay, so all these things cause tumah. Anything else? There's Aver min achai, so there's one more.
UX. You said the blood does or doesn't?
It does. Blood from a mace, I was just getting confused. Blood does. Aver min achai, what's an Aver min achai? You notice that there's an adjective. Min achai, from a living person. An aver, a complete aver, we'll talk about what an aver is. An aver, as you know, needs basar, gidim, and atzamos. Any part of your body that has basar, flesh of any sort, organ or muscle or anything else, atzamos, bones, and gidim, long stringy things was my preferred definition for gidim, is mitame, an amputated finger. From a living person, is mitame be'ohel. Okay, it causes tumah. We'll talk about when I said be'ohel. All these things cause tumah. Okay?
So
all of these things cause tumah. Aver is min hachai.
So if somebody gets their finger travel in a door, and they're, you know, parents of Kohen, they can't pick up the finger.
We'll talk about that. Can the Kohen himself get it reattached?
Oh, wow.
Okay, we'll talk quickly. How do you transmit Tumah? There are three ways. Let's write it. Maga, Masa, and Ohel. Maga is touching. Masa is carry, meaning indirect touching. I can say my knapsack. Masa technically means carrying, right? If I'm carrying the Tumah but I'm not touching it, if it's on top of a board or something, there are two types of Ohel. There is Ma'ahil, and there's Ohel Hamshacha. Ma'ahil means that I am above or below the Tumah. I am putting my hand above or my body above or below the Tumah, meaning Tumah is above me. And Ohel Hamshacha means under the same contiguous roof. Contiguous is very important. It is above or below. Now the most interesting of this is, so Maga and Masa are in most types of Tumah. Tumas Ohel only applies to Tumas Meis. Only Dvarim that are Tamei Mishim Tumas Meis are Metamei Be'Ohel. And Ohel Hamshacha is fascinating because if I have Tumah over here, every single person in this room is Tamei. We're all under the same roof. So Ohel Hamshacha is going to cause us the most problems and the most fun. And we'll have a lot of fun talking about this on Wednesday. All right. Take care. I'll see you then.